Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Monday, February 29th, 2016. Is there such a thing as Happy Leap Day, Al? Happy Leap Day.
I guess it look before you leap. That's what leap year is all about. Look before you leap.
And I'll tell you what, there's going to be a lot. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of looking this year or a lot of leaping this year, but it's certainly proving to be a...
Everything's jumping.
Everything's jumping this year. It used to be an old Irish legend or maybe that women would propose to their men.
Sadie Hawkins Day, Al Capp, Little Abner.
Mm-hmm.
And Sadie Hawkins Day, and
And there was also a play, and also for men, it was called Bachelor's Day, in which they had to wear a glove of some sort. He was expected to pay a penalty if he refused a marriage proposal from a woman on Leap Day. So European countries have a lot of Leap Day.
There was a lot of immigration on honor before February 28th, and then people would come back, you know, after the beginning of March.
Yes. Yeah, so, anyway, happy Leap Year Day, and gold leaped. Gold did some of its own leaping today. New York spot price after market, we're looking at $1,760, up $1,760 at $1,240.40. So we're at a nice run, up 22 at 15 on the nose. Platinum was up 21, the biggest leaper of the day, 939, and palladium was up 9 at $497. The USDX today was also a little bit stronger, 0.06 at 98.15, and oh, you would think crude oil was just right back running up to all-time highs once again. It was like the crude oil crisis is over. It's up a dollar, 1.01 at 33.79. And the paper markets today, they were down big in early morning trade. They actually were up for a large part of the day. They reversed. And you have the Dow down 123 points, 16,516. The NASDAQ was down 32 points at 45.57. The S&P was also down 15 at 1932. So they did bring them back most of the day, but they couldn't keep the markets in the green territory. The 10-year yield, 1.74%. Excuse me, a little pressure on that. Euro, 109, and that is down 0.44. European markets, the Asian markets were down the most, and Germany and London were basically flat on the day. I know Thursday we had a big day in the Shanghai. It was down 6%. Let's see what it did overnight. It was down an almost another 3% at 26.87, down just about 80 points. So, and we'll be talking a little bit about the G20 meeting a little bit later on in the program, as it was held in China, and China's made all kinds of promises about their currency and so forth. But I think you wanted to touch on something else first, Al.
Well, we could talk a little bit about there's a political candidate. His name escapes me. Political candidate, ability. Who's one of your favorites, isn't it?
One of my favorites, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, we're talking about Donald Trump, of course. Melody has had enough of the election cycle. Didn't necessarily want to participate any further in the existing election. And she'd like to have it held next week at the latest.
At the latest.
Yeah, but we're going to probably have to let it go until November.
Okay, so.
In the meantime, I just saw a little article that makes me think, maybe I understand a little about the Trump's success. Washington Examiner, they published an article, and the headline was, "Trump won't denounce Ku Klux Klan supporter David Duke's endorsement." Everybody's heard about this, but I'll give you a little different spin on it. Donald Trump refused to condemn racist group that would support his candidacy a few days after former Ku Klux Klan member David Duke endorsed him. "I have to look at that group," Trump told Jack Tapper on CNN's State of the Union Sunday. "If you would send me a list of the groups, I would do research on them, and I would disavow."
His research is a poll. To see if they should support her.
Well, he's got a point here. You know, I don't care. How many people are going to denounce support from the Black Panthers? How many Democrats are going, "Well, I won't take any vote from them"? Oh, yeah? I bet they do. You know, it is a free country, or at
Absolutely.
Least it was once upon a time. And there are all kinds of people, except for Melody and myself, of course, who have some peculiar ideas that are maybe out of the mainstream.
Well, I'm glad you included
I get the vote.
I'm glad you included me in that, Al.
Yeah. Well, I knew you'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's Monday, and I'm just trying to brighten the week a little
bit. Year. Yeah, go ahead.
Trump said he knew nothing about Duke, a nationally known former grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, who said that voting against Trump is a voting against white heritage. Trump's opponents, Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, were quick to criticize Trump's refusal to reject the Ku Klux Klan's support. Now, when I read that article, it was obvious, or when I read that article, it was obvious to me that Senators Rubio and Cruz were quick to do what was politically correct and criticize Trump's failure to condemn KKK support. Then it dawned on me that the key to Trump's success just might be that he routinely rejects whatever is politically correct. If it's politically incorrect to reject illegal aliens, Trump says he'll build a wall between the United States and Mexico. If it's politically incorrect to reject Muslim refugees, Trump rejects them. If it's politically incorrect to reject support from the Ku Klux Klan, Trump accepts that support. I'm wondering, does a significant portion of the public love Trump simply because he can be relied on to reject just about everything that's politically correct? I mean, you listen to him speak, and almost everything he says is a little bit shocking. I don't mean that the statement by itself is shocking, but it's shocking to hear it from a politician. And I'm wondering, are Americans so sick and tired of political correctness that we'll support any candidate who is not politically correct? Are we so sick and tired of the establishment? And who could be more politically correct than the establishment? that we're drawn to support anyone who's persistently politically incorrect? Is being politically incorrect a key to Trump's success? I think it's certainly part of the reason. I don't see it's the biggest reason or all of it, but I think it's part of the reason.
Just as we had mentioned off air, I mean, he did reject the Reform Party, in which he has mentioned David Duke as being a part of that. He also included Pat Buchanan on there, but he was rejecting the Reform Party. And I think it was, you know, I can only imagine the amount of information that's being flooded to you as you're campaigning to be president. And yeah, I think it was just a smart thing to do not to make any comments until you really know what's going on, because you don't want to say something. So, you know, I think in this case, this is one time I think he remembered who he was, but I also thought this was a good way for him to change, and to.
Maybe he thought it was a different David Duke.
Don't know.
Maybe that's
He has rejected him. He did, you know. So, you can't remember everything. And
I do.
You know, I think it. Now that's so funny.
Well,
yeah, I'm gonna.
Maybe not quite everything, but all, but still a lot.
As we all do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I agree with you. It is a lot of this. Well, you know what, Al? It, to me, and this isn't against Donald Trump. I don't want to get into that argument again. But it is a sign of the times of how this country is really split. It is becoming them and us. You're either politically correct or you're not politically. And, you know, there has been a wedge. Now, maybe that's a good thing, but we're seeing it everywhere. I mean, it's just not in this situation. We're seeing that division.
Well, the public has
everywhere.
Had it.
We've
the
had it. Yes.
Had it. We've just
absolutely.
Said this is enough. We've had all the lies and BS we want out of government, and Trump doesn't seem to be delivering. You know, again, I was pointing
and
out.
I'm saying this as I was saying that as a good thing, not as a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's time we rejected all the nonsense coming out of government. You know what politically correct is? What the words mean? They are like virtual reality. When you talk about virtual reality, you're talking about something that isn't real. And when you talk about politically correct, you're talking about something that really isn't politically, that really isn't correct. All right? We can do what's correct or we can do what's politically correct. They're two different things. Politically correct is not correct. And here comes Trump, and he's just shooting from the hip, and he says some things that sound pretty stupid sometimes. But yet, while Rubio and Cruz,
memory.
They're just being don't go rubbing it in, Melody.
Status quo, I mean.
I mean, you can count on them to be politically correct. Mm-hmm. They understand. They are lifetime politicians. They understand what to say, what not to say. Doesn't matter what they believe. It doesn't matter what's right or wrong. There's just some things you're not supposed to say. Trump doesn't seem to be caught in those limits. Trump just lets it all hang out. And sometimes it's kind of stupid, or at least it seems that way, and yet people are refreshed. They say, oh my God, someone is trying to treat us as if we were adults. Someone is telling us what he actually thinks. And it might not be a good idea, but at least he's not lying to us, or so it seems. He's not giving us political correctness, and I think some people are drawn to that. They say, yay, yay.
Well, look how people were drawn to the Tea Party. But it really is the Tea Party's failure that has really given Trump the timing of his campaign. Because a lot of those people that are, you know, that are sick and tired of it, they were followers of the Tea Party, and we saw what happened at the last election, and all their little promises turned into nothing. They flat out lied to him, and I think that's what really, really woke up a lot of people. And because everybody thought that the Tea Party was different, everybody thought that the Tea Party was doing, was going to do what Trump is doing. And they failed
to
do so.
Promising to do.
Promising
to do. See what
he
does.
Yeah, it's promising to do.
That remains to be seen. But
so it's you know, and again, it is.
Yep.
It is.
It's you try to make sense of what's going on here, and maybe there is no sense to be made here. Maybe it's all nonsense. Just another election. What do they call them usually? The silly season? When we're having our presidential elections again? there's a certain amount of truth to that. It just does, at times, it does get ridiculous. And when you look back and why different presidents were elected.
Let me ask you a question.
What the heck were we thinking about when we elected, you know, I could name a bunch of, or I could name several of them.
Let me ask you a question. We only got a few minutes left. What's your idea when he makes a comment about changing the libel laws so that people can sue the, you know, sue? He references the media, but I mean, if you change that to where you would have, you know, the access to sue if somebody says something bad about you.
Well, you do. You do right now.
But he's going to widen that so it's even easier access to lawsuits.
I don't know. You'd have to look at that. I'd have to look at the law or whatever was being proposed, and then I could take a guess at it. But as you know, my general reaction is we don't need any more laws in this country. I don't care what you think about them. Every law that gets passed seems to be, they claim it's going to save us, it's going to make us healthier, we're going to get free lunches, we're going to get this, that, and the other. It's always promoted as some sort of a benefit, but in the end, it seems to be a device designed to extract money, wealth, obedience from the vast majority of the American people and give it to a minority who has enough cash on hand to bribe Congress. I don't need any more laws right now. We have enough laws, in my opinion. All right. And the problem is Congress is constantly looking for new ones, in my opinion, so they can collect new bribes. Someone was to say, okay, we've got enough laws. We don't need any more laws. What's going to happen to all the lobbyists? What's going to happen to all the political campaign contributions that are going to congressmen and senators and even presidents?
Well, they're still going to be there. They're not going away.
I don't think so. I mean, the fundamental business of Congress is to broker laws. People come in from special interests who have enough money.
I understand that.
They say, okay, how much money you got? You give me a law
that's
and I'll get it.
That's not going to change.
That's not for dollars.
That, I don't see that changing.
Well, what I'm saying, you know. It should. It's really the big flaw in our political campaign system. We allow people in government to take bribes. And we call it political campaign contributions, but it's bribes. When you sit back and talk about Ted Cruz accepting $1 million from Wall Street back when he ran for the Senate, it means he's owned and operated by Wall Street. And that's the reason I would not vote for that man under any circumstances. I might vote for Hillary before I'd vote for Ted Cruz. And I would hate to vote for Hillary. All right? But I'm just saying that guy is owned and operated, in my opinion, and I don't, you know, nobody gives you $1 million for nothing. Come along and say, well, you're doing such a tremendous
job. Yeah, but you know what, Alex?
I'll give you $1 million.
If he got $1 million, that means Hillary has $80 million.
No, I understand. She's
she's little Goldman Sachs queen.
We have
queen.
The law. The system of legislation is for sale to the highest bidder. And that doesn't include the vast majority of the American people who don't have enough money to buy a congressman or a senator. And therefore, they just, you know, they have to give us lip service every couple of years when they run for office. But the real deal is who's given these people money. And that's who owns them, and that's who they represent. They aren't representing their constituents back in their district or their state. Not really. They are representing the government to the constituents and promising that they're going to do this, that, or the other, but it isn't likely to happen, especially as long as special interests can bribe them. One of the most important things, you want to clean this country up, want to clean this government up, you revise the political campaign contribution laws where these people at least, if they take money from Wall Street, from, I don't remember which one it was, Bank of America or whoever, Chase. But if you're going to take money from Chase, you can't vote on a bill that impacts Chase's profitability. All right, that's it. Took the money from this guy, you can't vote. And see how fast the political campaign contributions dry up, because it's quid pro quo from the perspective of the corporations. We're giving you money, you are going to give us some sort of legislation that we want passed. And if it turns out they can't do it, they can't pass that legislation, they can't vote on it, they can't support it, guess what? I believe the corporations just say, bye-bye, we're out of here. quid pro quo. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. You know, during the break, it occurred to me, given that leap years happen every 4 years and presidential elections happen every 4 years, it appears to me that presidential elections are always held in a leap year. This year's a presidential election. This year's a leap year. 4 years from now, we'll have another presidential election. We'll have another leap year. And that's interesting to me because here I sit kind of like little Abner. And I'm afraid that some politician is going to do Sadie Hawkins, try a Sadie Hawkins routine on me and try to get me married up to another president and Congress and Senate. I'm saying, no, I'm content. You don't understand. I don't mind being a bachelor, you understand? And the politicians are coming around. Anyway, it's an interesting little analogy, at least from my perspective. Here's something from Reuters, and the headline is G20 to say world needs to look beyond ultra-easy policy for growth. Right? No, this is interesting. You've got a couple articles on the G20. meeting this last weekend. The world's top economies declared on Saturday that they need to look beyond ultra-low interest rates and printing money to shake the global economy out of its torpor. Right? Ultra-low interest rates as zero interest rate policy, ZIRP, which has been part of our central banks, one of their tactics in order to allegedly restore this country from a recession to, you know, prosperity. And printing money, that's quantitative easing. They've been injecting billions and trillions of dollars to try to stimulate the economy. It hasn't worked. So here we've got the world's top economies declared on Saturday that they need to look beyond ultra-low interest rates and printing money. By telling the world that we must look beyond ultra-low interest rates and printing money, the central banks are implicitly telling us that, one, they acknowledge that quantitative easing and ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, are ineffective. And two, there's not going to be much more QE or ZIRP in the future. A lot of people are sitting back. You know, we've had people talk about QE to infinity once they started that. They said they can never stop. Well, they are stopping. They did stop. And if we can believe the central bankers that are meeting over in Asia right
now. But we can't, Al.
Well, we've got to talk about it.
Yes.
I mean, if this is what they said, we have to consider the possibility. Who knows? Maybe they were telling the truth. I mean, it could happen, Melody. All of this implies there'll be less artificial support for the stock markets. And the stock market indices can be expected to fall. The bankers' comments may even signal that there won't be as much manipulation of commodity markets as we've had in the past. If so, gold and silver should rise. The article continues. It says the global recovery continues. This is from one of the people at the meeting in Shanghai. Oh, please. I mean, the basalt dry index is down so low, nobody knew it could get that low. It hasn't been this low since Columbus. All right. They didn't actually track it all the way back that far, but I mean, it's a fraction. It's fallen 95%, maybe more. But they claim the global recovery continues. No, it doesn't. We barely had a global recovery. And they go on. They say monetary policies will continue to support economic activity and ensure stability. But monetary policies, to be clear about this, that's what's performed by central banks like the Federal Reserve. They're engaged in monetary policies. And they say monetary policies will continue. But they go on, they say, but monetary policy alone cannot lead to balanced growth. And when they say monetary policy alone, you should think central bankers alone. They're saying we can't do this. The central bankers are arguing that they alone can't fix the global economy. By making that argument, the central bankers implicitly claim that the blame for the current global recession should be shared with governments. More importantly, the central bankers are also implicitly arguing that they don't want to bear the exclusive blame for whatever global depression might be coming. They are covering their backsides in anticipation of a real global calamity that takes place in the near future. They say, hey, don't blame us. All we do is monetary. You know, we deal with monetary policy alone. It's the fiscal policy that the government deals with. That's what you got to focus on if you want to get out of this recession. They're covering their butts here, folks. And that is evidence to me. I don't think they're doing this in a retroactive manner where they say, oh, don't blame us for what happened over the last 6 or 8 years. I think they're trying to cover their buns for what's going to happen in the very near future. And if I'm right, they've got to be frightened. Christine Lagarde, managing director of the International Monetary Fund, warned that there was a risk of that the recovery could derail. I'm telling you, there hasn't been a recovery. I know, yeah, there's been a little bit of one, but not something to speak of, and especially not if we had a government that was giving us honest economic figures. She continued to say, we are committed to further enhancing the structural reform agenda. Structural reform agenda. I don't even know for sure what they mean by that, but I know that when they talk about restructuring, they're talking about restructuring the debt, and if you owed $1 million, we will restructure it down to where now you only owe $500,000 or maybe even a quarter of a million. Restructuring means, now I'm not sure that's what they're talking about here, but that's what they said. Germany made it clear that it was not keen on new stimulus. That would be ZERP or quantitative easing. With Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble saying on Friday that the debt-financed growth model had reached its limits. Right there is one of the most remarkable statements I expect to see. All right. We have the finance minister of a significant economy in this country, that would be Germany, has admitted that the debt-financed growth model has reached its limits. Well, that's bizarre. He went on to say it's even causing new problems, raising debt, causing bubbles, and excessive risk-taking, zombifying the economy. I'm not sure what zombifying the economy means, but I suppose he means it's just not functioning properly. But he's talking about the debt-financed growth model. That's the first time I've heard any banker or significant government official admit or imply that there's something inherently wrong with anything that was debt-based. By expressly admitting that the debt-based growth model was flawed, German Finance Minister Schäuble implicitly admitted that the entire debt-based monetary system is flawed and was therefore on the way out. I mean, this is an extraordinary, for me, this is an extraordinary admission from Germany. If the debt-based financial model doesn't work, okay, then what are we doing? The whole system we've had since at least 1971 has been a debt-based monetary system, a debt-based economy, all right? We have been running on debt, which is nothing but promises to pay, not real assets, just debt, promise, promise, promise. And here comes Wolfgang Schäuble, he's saying, nope, that's not working. What does that necessarily mean? They've got to give it up. China's finance minister said monetary policy will probably have to be kept appropriately loose, even though people have realized that its role cannot replace fiscal policy. Monetary policy is orchestrated by the central banks. Fiscal policy is orchestrated by the government. China is saying, look, the central banks can't do it. We're going to need stronger fiscal policy from the government. First, central bankers are admitting that they're out of effective solutions to economic problems. QE doesn't work, ZERP doesn't work, and they don't have much else other than maybe negative interest, and that'll be a farce also. Second, they're trying to at least share and artificially shift blame for our economic problems from central banks to governments. And again, to me, the implication is that central bankers see a major collapse coming, and like the proverbial rats, they're abandoning the ship and swimming for shore. Don't blame us. Blame the government. They're the ones. We're not the ones responsible. It's the government. Well, I can't tell you that everything I've said here is God's truth, but that's the way it reads to me. The central bankers are making admissions that strike me as just almost shocking, all right? Especially coming out of Germany, where he says debt-based financial model no longer works. It's reached its limits. He didn't actually say it no longer works, but he says it can't get any bigger. It's reached its limits. That almost certainly means that it has to fail. So here we have the G20 They're saying,
You know, it says where the debt-based growth model was flawed. Well, yeah, it was flawed. The flaw was you had a system that wasn't backed by gold.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that was
all the debt-based.
All
the debt-based is
it's
by
a fiat. The fiat system doesn't work, and that and by restructuring, if you're getting out of this debt-based growth model, if that was flawed, the fiat currency model was flawed. Was the system that they're going to have to restructure to get back to? They're going to have to get back
silver.
Exactly.
And it's really extraordinary. I see this from again German Minister of Finance. That to me is an extraordinary admission.
Let me just say one more thing. Is they're recognizing it's just not the admission that the debt-based growth model is flawed. They're admitting that they're going to have to go back to a more
an asset-based monetary system.
Exactly. That's because they know
an asset-based financial system, and that means somebody's got to have some gold and silver.
Yep.
All right. They can't do it. Again, just an incredible admission. From my perspective, that's a big story. I got another one here from Bloomberg News. I don't know if we'll have time to get into it right now. I guess we could. It's also G20 seeks infrastructure push to help boost global economy. Global finance chiefs are stepping up their call for development lenders such as the World Bank to help economic growth by further opening the infrastructure taps. They're going to build more bridges and roads and whatever in third world countries and perhaps here in the United States and so on. Now, that's all an interesting argument, but where's the capital going to come from to invest in infrastructure development? According to, you know, can't just build these roads and bridges without some money. According to Germany's finance minister Schäuble, the debt-based growth model is failing. If he's right, that means government's capacity to borrow and go deeper into debt in order to spend is shrinking. If the debt-based growth model is failing, you're not going to be able to borrow as much money as we have or currency as we have in the past. If government can't borrow enough money to make significant expenditures on infrastructure, where's the money going to come from? Are they going to raise taxes during a recession and or a depression? I don't think so. Are they going to just print it at the Federal Reserve? That won't increase. That will increase, excuse me, the money supply. It'll cause inflation. And I know government wants inflation. But I strongly suspect that the people of the world are increasingly unwilling to participate in any more of the debt-based monetary schemes promoted by government and or central banks like the Federal Reserve. I think we're approaching a point where the public finally says, enough BS, enough schemes and tricks and market manipulations. Don't try to con us with another promise of free lunches for all. Tell us the truth, even if the economy collapses. I think the central bankers may know what I'm talking about. I think they may be observing the same thing, and if I'm right, the central bankers should be terrified. Public's not buying their bait. They put out zero interest rate, negative interest rates. People, they're giving money away and people aren't taking it in sufficient quantity to stimulate the economy. It's like having a new car on your lot that you can't give away for free. There's something wrong with that car. The public looks at your new car and they're saying, wait a second, you're not going to sell me one of those things. I don't care if it's free. I'm not taking one. And that's what's, figuratively speaking, that's what's happening in the financial world right now. The free lunches aren't working. It's no longer a reliable bait, and they don't have anything else to offer. And if they don't have anything else to offer, how can they control us? How can they control the economy? Implication is they can't. And again, this is consistent with the idea the central bankers ought to be pretty scared right now. Let's take a break for some more commercials. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival. Just a moment. Please stay tuned.
ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for Thyme Tincture NT to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
We do have a caller. We have Joe from Arkansas calling us this afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Al and Melody.
Hi, Joe.
What you got for us?
Hello. Yeah, happy leap day.
Happy what?
What I wanted
leap.
To...
Oh, leap day.
Leap
okay.
Day.
I have heard it reported that in parts of Texas, the economy is way down because the price of oil is down.
Yeah.
And I've also heard that the reason that the price of oil is down is because Saudi Arabia wants to put the frackers in America out of business. And this reminds me of something I read one time about the War of 1812, where England wanted to prevent America from ever becoming a manufacturing country of any significance. So they started dumping a lot of cheap manufactured stuff from England on the American market. And Congress at that time, so that the American, to take the market away from the American manufacturers. And so Congress at that time responded by putting a 45% tariff on English stuff so that manufacturing in America started flourishing. And as a result of that kind of policy, America became the world's greatest manufacturing country. And so I think what this shows is that if a country has free trade, then other countries can use that as a form, can use trade, they're trading as a form of economic warfare against that country. And another example of this I've heard is that after World War II, the American government wanted to sell American cars in Japan. And so they started preaching free trade to the Japanese government. And the Japanese government said, well, if we do that, we'll never develop beyond tuna fishing. And so they put a tariff on American cars and American manufactured stuff. And as a result, you know, the Japanese developed a tremendous car industry. And so so my point is that, protectionism has been made a dirty word, but it looks to me like, you know, trade can often be used as a form of economic warfare. And so the government should, you know, protect the country and protect the country's own producers against that form of economic warfare. So protectionism should not be a dirty word.
And you may, and if I understand you correctly, you're recommending that they protect the country and the industry within with tariffs to keep, to at least diminish the amount of foreign goods that are coming in. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think that the reason that if we're going to have a country of any significance, you know, a country of any value, you know, we have to have basically a self-sufficient economy
Yep.
With all sorts of economic activity going on here, you know, if we're going to have a country that's, you know, of any significance and worth, you know, then we have to have all sorts of industries here. We should have a good electronics industry here. We should have a good watch industry here. We should have great farming and agriculture and mining. And we should have, basically we should be strong in all the different economic sectors if we're going to have a worthwhile country. And that gives opportunity for the American people to work in whatsoever field of economic activity they choose, you know, because they can find opportunities to work in that field in their country. And so the government is not doing right by the people of the country if it lets the country's markets be dominated by foreign stuff, because then its own people are deprived of opportunity.
Yep. No question about it. I mean, they let illegal aliens come in here to take the jobs that are left over after we shipped industries and jobs to third world countries like China. The reason, you know, the government claims we have a 4.9% unemployment rate. John Williams says it's closer to 23%. I don't know who is closest to the truth, but I'm inclined to believe John Williams.
Even if you went in the middle, it's still high.
I know. I
understand. I do believe John Williams, yes.
Yeah. And how did we get to this extraordinary unemployment rate? It's because of government meddling. They, in the name of global free trade, they've knocked down the tariffs. And they argued that the best way each nation will produce what it's best at and what it has most natural resources for and whatever. But the most natural resources include cheap labor. I mean, we could have maintained our standard of living if we had kept our tariffs up and instead of knocking them down and forcing the American labor to compete head-on with laborers in Mexico or China. Inevitably, if multinational corporations can employ people in foreign countries for a fraction of what they pay American workers, I guarantee you that's going to. Why did they relocate to China? For the egg rolls, for the, you know, the wonderful clean air they have over there. They went to China for cheap labor. They could afford. Building the plants was relatively cheap. We look at it and think, oh my gosh, it'll cost a fortune to build a plant that builds automobiles in China. But the people who actually manufacture automobiles understand that they can get around the infrastructure. That's no big deal. They can build the building. Not a big problem. The problem is paying for the help. It's labor. And so they went there for cheap labor. That's what drew businesses to China, cheap labor. All right? Which inevitably means it's increased unemployment in this country. And everything we're seeing for a recession right now probably flows from that fact. And this is all what? Because we have a Congress and Senate and White House who believe in the New World Order. They want one world government. And they're prepared to sell this nation down the river and watch it ruined and destroyed in order to allow global governance to take place and be established. What we need are high tariff barriers, and they will give us, and in the midst of that, we make our own computers, we make our own TVs, we make our own cars, our own washing machines. It's not to say there's no foreign goods coming in. It's not to say we don't export some of our stuff. But we capture our market for ourselves. By opening the American market up to foreign, just wide open, to foreign cheap labor, we have badly diminished the American people's level of prosperity. And it's not going to come back until somebody gets into office who says to helk with the New World Order, to helk with one world government, to help with global free trade. We're going to capture, we've got the best market in the world, and we should capture it for ourselves. Our government has decided to generously share the American market with the rest of the world, and in doing so, it's wonderful for China. You know, other parts of the world are doing great, but we are doing badly. And it's because our government has betrayed us. And it's not going to stop until we insist on electing people who will actually do what's right for the general welfare of the American people. General welfare is a term we find in the preamble of the Constitution. for our general welfare. Not special interest legislation, general welfare for the vast majority of the American people. That's what they should be doing, and I doubt that there's anyone listening in this audience who can point to a bill that's been passed by Congress in the last 10 years that was actually for the general welfare of the American people. Almost every bill they pass is for special interests.
Now, I just want to, we're going to have to disconnect with the, we got a bad static with you that's coming through. So you could either
with
call
me?
The, no, with the,
Joe?
With Joe. So okay. We got a bad static coming through, and so he needs to either reconnect to see if we can do it without that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Al.
It's all right. That's all right. I had to come up for air anyway. So, Joe, are you going to call us back?
Yeah, I'll do that, yeah. Okay, hopefully the static will disappear. Yeah, there is one thing. One more thing I'd like to say. Okay,
well,
I'll call
you
back.
Why don't you call? Yeah, you got a lot of static, so.
Yeah, okay, I'll call you back.
Here's, while we're waiting on Joe, here's another brief article that we can talk about, just make a comment or two. IRS, this is from Reuters. IRS identifies more cyber attacks to access data. The Internal Revenue Service said on Friday an investigation into hacking attack revealed in May that cyber criminals had made attempts to gain access to about 390,000 additional taxpayer accounts. The agency said the May tax return information of about 114,000 U.S. taxpayers who had their accounts illegally accessed by cyber criminals over the preceding 4 months. Then there were another 111,000 attempts that were unsuccessful. The IRS revealed in August, new review identified 220,000 more instances where data was breached. In other words, they initially said we got 114,000 taxpayers who've been accessed illegally, and now they say, oops, wait, not just 114, it's 334,000 that have been accessed. It involves a get transcript program for online applications. Turns out it was messed up. And the lesson here is, look, if you want to keep a secret, don't put it in a digital format. And we go to that lesson on a fairly regular basis on this program, but it's the truth of the matter. If you got any secrets, don't put them in digital format. All right? And certainly don't put them on the internet. So, oh, we can trust the government. We can trust the IRS. No, you can't. There's nothing the government can do to stop the hackers. I think Joe is back. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, one more point I'd like to make. Another flaw that I see in that argument for free trade, you know, that each country should do whatever it's best at and they should trade with each other. And that's this, you know, except in cases where, you know, maybe some country has some raw material that another country doesn't have, you know, like I don't think the United States has any rubber, and it's only tropical countries that have rubber. You know, so we have to buy our rubber from other countries, you know, except in rare cases of some materials like that. Any country can get better at producing anything. You know, it's not a static situation where some country has an advantage forever in producing certain stuff. You know, like at one time, 50 years ago, say China didn't have prayer in the world of producing a computer probably, you know, but they learned how to produce computers. You know, they developed the technology, and now they're the greatest computer producer in the world. And with other things, too. I understand at one time, you know, the United States steel industry could not compete with the European steel industry. But Abraham Lincoln, I think, was responsible for giving some impetus to building up the steel industry in this country. And so the United States, you know, overcame that lack of advantage over the Europeans, and the United States built up, you know, the world's greatest steel industry at the time. The United States, you know, learned how to become a much better steel producer. So suppose there's two people that have farms. Suppose I have a farm and you have a farm, you know, and say I'm good at producing apples right now, you're good at producing milk and so on like that. And so, you know, you say, well, you should buy your milk from me and I should buy my apples from you because I'm better at this and you're better at that. But suppose I say, well, I want to be more self-sufficient and, heck, I want to learn how to produce milk. So that if I work hard at it for a few years to learn how to produce milk, you know, I can probably become as good or better than you. So this situation as to which country has the advantage in producing this or that over another country, it's not static. Like
it's not just advantage.
Said,
it's not,
you know,
just about advantages
develop.
In production. One of the other things that happens here is when you put those high tariff barriers, you restore high tariff barriers. You not only become sufficient, you become independent. All right? You don't need the New World Order. You're not worried about what happens in Mexico or Canada or the North American Union. We got this. We can handle it on our own. If we are responsible, when we take those tariff barriers down, we become irresponsible. Our government becomes irresponsible. They are betraying the best interests of the American people. They're sacrificing our interests in order to enrich foreign countries, and that's not part of their job description. What they're doing is arguably treasonous. Everybody who supports the New World Order, global free trade, they're helping to tear this country down. It is arguably treason, all right? It is certainly irresponsible. Those people have no obligation to do what's right for the world. That's not their job description as congressmen, senators, presidents, federal judges. Their job is to worry about the United States of America. And they can't even do a very good job with that. And given the poor job they've done here, they have no business working in the rest of the world. Right? The rest of the world, China's going to have to take care of China. And Iran's going to have to take care of Iran. And we can sell things back and forth. It doesn't mean I'm not arguing that there should be no global trade. But I am arguing that there have to be tariffs that are high enough to protect American workers from cheap foreign labor. And if we're not willing to do that, American workers' standard of living must go down. Government tax revenues must go down. Standard of living must go down. So, you know, we're just caught. We are betrayed by our own government and also by our own ignorance. And by our own apathy and our refusal to stand up and do what's right for ourselves, for our family, for our communities, for our states. Joe, we've got about 15 seconds left. Any last comments in 15 seconds?
Well, it seems the way they sell us this globalism or internationalism is by making us think that somehow if we stand up for our country, if we're nationalists for our country, you know, then we're hurting other countries. But no, you know, we shouldn't
deliberately go and try to hurt other countries,
but we should do what's best for our country.
I agree. We should be working America first. That's what should be happening. Who knows? Trump talks about restoring glory to this country. Maybe America first will be part of that grandeur, glory. In any case, we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom and our guest Joe from Arkansas. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer, and Joe from Arkansas. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, money.